What up, everybody, and welcome to the Ultimate Patriots Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Dennis Tien, recording remote from my office. Joining me, as always, the CEO of HedgeBetter, Justin Fine. We are here to break down everything happening in Patriots Nation, talk about all the big news. This big story this week, of course, is the schedule. We're going to go through all 17 games. We're going to talk about a lot of stuff. We got a terrific episode planned. Justin, my man, what is going on? How are you, sir?
Doing good, man. Trying to stay cool. Weather's getting hot out there. The allergies are going crazy, dude. My eyes are bugging me, man. I don't know if you can tell. They're all
it's that time of year.
It's that time of year. But you know what? It's also the time of year where we get some football updates. The mini camps are going on. We get the schedule. I got buddies talking football trips again. That's always the time of year you want to be at, right?
100%. Now, you just took your first trip with a little guy. Give us like the quick postmortem on that. Travel now suddenly becomes a lot different for you.
Oh, totally different. I mean, it's just, you know what? Your days are just super condensed, right? You don't have late nights. The mornings are early, like, and that's just going to impact what you can do. You know, getting in and out of the house is obviously crazy. You know, it's not just grab your phone and wallet and head out the door, right? You know, you got a million things to pack, a million things to check. And even while you're out, you always got to be ready to stop and change a diaper, give a bottle, something like that, you know? So it's a lot different of an experience, but I will say very cool. You know, different experience, but a cool experience taking a trip as a family now. So, you know, learning experience for sure.
I think it only gets harder as they get bigger. That's what I'm here to warn you about, especially if you have more than one.
Oh, for sure.
It can be outright circus-like. So
yeah,
good luck on that.
Exactly.
All right, well, let's get into this. Everything going on at Foxborough with the New England Patriots. And I mean, we're going to go through the schedule. This is our official schedule episode. So we're going to go all, game by game like we do every year and say who we think is going to win, what the record's going to be, and share a few thoughts on each of these 17 games and the schedule in general. But before we do that, a couple other news items I thought we could lead it off with. Number one is we are actually, today is May 20th, we're recording, so we're pushing close to this sort of magical June 1st date that we keep hearing about for AJ Brown for like the last like 3 or 4 months about when supposedly AJ Brown is going to become a Patriot. And I have a take on that, Justin, and I'm just kind of like reading the tea leaves. And there was a story a couple weeks ago, I think I wrote something online about it. It got a tremendous response online, which was great, that basically the Pats were going to give a 2028 first round pick for, so not next year's draft, but the draft after, for AJ Brown. And that really made my antenna go up, because to me, that was a leaked story from the Philadelphia Eagles to try and create a market for AJ Brown to see if someone could beat or better whatever the Patriots actually were offering. Yeah. And then today, of course, a report by Jason Lunkenfort that the Patriots are not the only team in the AJ Brown sweepstakes, I think was kind of big news, because many of us were walking around assuming this was a done deal. And so my take on this is that the AJ Brown trade, I think he will probably still end up in Foxborough, but this is not a done deal by any means. And I'm totally okay with if he ends up somewhere else and the Patriots keep their first round pick, because no matter who's in the market, the Patriots should not give up a first round pick for AJ Brown.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, it's definitely not a done deal. You're hearing teams like Jacksonville now are part of the mix.
Kansas City.
And look, when we talked, I think the last time we filmed, we both said that we didn't want to give up a first round pick for AJ Brown. We said we'd be okay with the second in a player, a third in a player, something of that nature. But you know, first round picks in the NFL are valuable, and to give them away for an aging guy who's on the decline, who's had problems, this and that, I just didn't, you know, it just didn't register as something that I wanted to do. And I think, you know, from my previous takes that I'm a little lower on bringing AJ Brown in than even like I think the general Boston media and Boston fans are, right? So, you know, for me to hear that we'd be
why is that, Justin? Is that because you don't believe in the player? You don't like the price? I mean, what is the reason?
There's a lot that goes into it. I like just comparing Kayshon Booty to AJ Brown right now. At this point in AJ Brown's career, I feel like AJ Brown is living off his past reputation, right? His name recognition. I'm looking at a guy who's getting older. His knee was a big enough concern that the LA Rams were out on wanting to go after him, right? He's had problems on and off the field, like in the locker room, you know, guys reading books on sidelines, having issues with his quarterback. The last 2 years, dropped balls became a big issue for him. So I'm looking at a guy who age is getting up there. His health has been in question. His performance has declined. He comes with baggage and drama. And I look at him and I just say, is that a guy that you want to trade a first round pick, and not only trade a first round pick for, but effectively you're moving on from Kayshon Booty, or most likely moving on from Kayshon Booty if you do that. And so you're trading a first round pick and bringing in a guy with all that baggage, and you're giving up a homegrown Patriot that I believe we got in like the later rounds. I think he was like a fifth or sixth round pick, Kayshon Booty, something like that. That's built a rapport with your quarterback that's kind of entering the prime of his career. So I get it. Like, AJ Brown of like the Titans era in like his first year with the Eagles is a better player than Kayshon Booty. But like, I'm just not convinced that what you're giving up is worth what you're getting in return at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly how I feel. And I've been really surprised at how overwhelmingly just like gaga everyone mm-hmm. in the Boston sports media and the fans are about bringing in AJ Brown. And look, I would love to bring in the AJ Brown of like 2021.
Exactly.
But that's not what you're bringing in. No. And, you know, as I illustrated in the column, the piece I wrote on our Facebook page on May 5th, like, this is a guy that is having declining production.
Yep.
The last two seasons, he's averaged 73 catches per season, which is okay, and 1,041 yards per season, which is okay, and 7 touchdowns, which is okay. But that's hardly number one wide receiver numbers. Now, the AJ Brown defenders would say, well, that's because it's all Jalen Hurts' fault. Fine. I don't know if I buy that. And the thing that I think is a huge red flag to me when you look at his stats, and this was mentioned in the column, that I think it's just a very incriminating of Brown and where he is right now in his career. When you consider all the news around his knees and all that, his career, his yards per carry reception, his yards per reception, excuse me, was a career low last year, 12.9 yep. yards for a guy that is supposed to be a deep threat. Yep. That's the lowest he ever had. So I feel like AJ Brown, we've seen this happen to many deep threat receivers. I feel like he's transitioning to a time in his career where he's going to be more of a possession receiver than a true dynamic number one deep threat. And like I said, I'm not opposed to bringing in a guy like that in, but it's not going to be for anything more than a third round pick.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's not that I don't think you could benefit from having AJ Brown on the roster. I don't think you benefit from giving up a first round pick and moving on from Kayshon Booty for him. So yep. I actually, you know what? I know I hear a lot of people, you know, especially the Boston sports media saying, whoa, you know, pump the brakes. Hold on. We might not be getting AJ Brown. And I'm sitting here going, I'm perfectly fine with that. That's for me, that's no cost to pay. I would be totally happy, especially now that you got Romeo Doubs on the roster. You keep your first yeah. round, you keep your first round pick, and maybe you even bring Stephon Diggs back. He was just recently cleared in that case. I know you're not the highest on him, but you bring back a guy now who's now another year removed from that injury. His baggage is kind of in the past now, after being vindicated in his trial, and he's got a rapport with the team and with Drake May, and you run a three-headed monster of Diggs, Booty, in Dubs, plus those other guys.
Well, I'll say this, you know? Like, I'm changing my mind and coming to your side on Diggs a little bit, and I'm going to give you a few reasons why. Number one is, you know, he won his case. So the case exactly. is behind him.
Right.
Right? He was exonerated. Number two is the off-the-field stuff has been quiet with him lately. And number three, the price is right. Like, you're going to yes. be able to bring him in at a good cap number. No one signed him yet. So maybe the value out there on the market in terms of dollars is not as much as it would be. And then you're not going to have to give up a draft pick to get him. So if you're asking me if I can bring in Stephon Diggs for just Robert Kraft's money alone versus having to give up a high draft pick for AJ Brown,
yep.
I think I'd take my chances with Diggs. I'll throw one other name at you, a guy that signed recently that I thought the Patriots, I would almost prefer him at not giving up a draft pick. I know he's not a better player, but Juwan Jennings, the guy that was in San Francisco last year, I think yeah. he had 11 touchdowns for the 49ers.
Yeah.
He signed with the Vikings 3 weeks ago. I mean, you don't have to give a draft pick to bring a guy in like that. He came in at a good number. I'd rather that than give up a first round pick for AJ Brown.
I couldn't agree more. And you know what? It's funny because I feel like there was this weird lull where, you know, when the AJ Brown trade rumors first started, we were hearing like a first and maybe multiple picks, right? We, you know, people were throwing two first and a second, you know, a first in player capital. Then that price kind of dropped down. And then we started hearing, okay, maybe a second or third round pick. And then we kind of became a little cool with it. And now it's jumped back up to now we're hearing a first round pick. And I just, you know, I'm just so out on that. I think as we've seen, those first round picks can be incredibly valuable. And again, if we were talking about the AJ Brown of old, right? Titans, exactly. AJ Brown,
that's a different story.
I'd give up two firsts for him. You know what I mean? Right. So, but that's not who we're getting, and that's not who he is.
110%, Justin. And I just don't think at this point, like, I just hope that Vrabel doesn't let his attachment to AJ Brown cloud his judgment on what Brown is really worth in 2026. But you know, I'm telling you right now, like, we've all been expecting this to happen. Maybe it still happens. Like, you know, all the reporting and the leaked stories and stuff, like, I just think it's all leading to the fact that the door is still wide open for him to totally end up somewhere else. And I would be 0% surprised at this point if someone else like Kansas City or Jacksonville or Buffalo swoops in and snags this guy and at the last second, you know, and I would not be surprised about that at all.
No, I wouldn't either. And the one last thing that I'll say, and I don't, you know, I know we keep talking about AJ Brown as being an upgrade to the wide receiver room, and an upgraded wide receiver room is good for your young quarterback. But like, you know what else I think is good for a young quarterback is continuity in building relationships, right? And this is already a quarterback who has seen multiple different offensive coordinators in a short career, right? He's had different weapons that he's had to get used to. So, like, I just don't like this revolving door in terms of, like, what Drake May is working with. I just want to see them build a little continuity. And even if that means you bring in another new receiver, don't bring in a guy who's in the back nine of his career that you might only get a year or two out of before you have to move on from him. Like, give this guy weapons, give Drake May weapons that he's going to be able to build a rapport with and work with for years to come. So that's just another thing that I think we're not talking about enough. It's just more change for a young quarterback that's only going to lead to another change in a year or two when Brown moves on.
Yeah, that's a fair point. And I guarantee you in 2028, you know, if they get two good years from AJ Brown, if they do trade that first round pick in 2028, like, that's going to feel like a horrible deal. Like, looking back, you know what I mean? And unless Brown absolutely comes in and crushes it, you're going to want that first round pick as you're entering Drake May's prime. Right.
Yep.
And you've traded for a guy that now, you know, you've gotten something out of, and maybe it was an upgrade, but he's well past his prime at that point. 33 years old, I think, at that point. Okay, let's move on. I want to talk a little bit about OTAs coming up for the team next week. And minicamp was last week, and I didn't really think there was much notable really for minicamp, except for one thing that I think really caught my eye. And that was Caleb Lomo, the first round pick, who was drafted as a tackle, played left tackle exclusively at Utah in college. And for minicamp this week, he played left tackle for the entire duration of the activities, for the entire rookie camp. So I thought that was really interesting for those that are saying they're grooming this guy to be Morgan Moses's replacement. And the fact is, he comes in right from the beginning and he's playing left tackle. Now, maybe that was just because they're trying to integrate him, you know, into things, and they'll transition him eventually. But I think as we head into OTAs and eventually mini camps, this is really going to be one of the real stories, is where is Caleb Lomo lining up and who is the left tackle of this team?
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, look, I look at this Caleb Lomo guy, and, you know, to me, like, as much as I love Will Campbell, my allegiance is to whoever the better player is. You know what I mean? So I think you have to see this guy work out at left tackle. You have to see what you got there. I'm sure they'll move him around throughout the offseason and get a feel, you know, for different combinations of offensive linemen at different positions. But, like, you need to give this Lomu kid a shot. It can't just be a foregone conclusion that he's coming in to play right tackle. You know what I mean? You drafted a left tackle. Your left tackle from last year had problems. Whether Lomu winds up at right tackle and Will Campbell remains your left tackle, that might be fine, but you have to explore the option.
I mean, you have to go with what's best for the team, obviously. And, like, to me, like, I can say 1,000%, like, if Will Campbell ends up being a starting right tackle or a starting guard and he ends up doing better there and thriving, and Lomo is the best left tackle on this team, like, I'm not going back and criticizing the Patriots because of that. Like, to me, you brought in two starters on your offensive line in 2 years. If they both end up being good players, like, that's a dub. Like, I'm not sitting here and looking back and saying, you know, I mean, you know, I've expressed my frustration about that pick in the past, but at this point, like, I'm not going to really criticize or read the Riot Act, right? If like the best configuration of this line involves Caleb Lomo at left tackle and Will Campbell somewhere else, like I would almost see that as a sign of strength and willingness to adapt to the reality of the situation.
Yeah, I'd be more upset if they didn't address the situation and then we got more of the same out of Will Campbell in year two. You know what I mean? So I love the fact that they're addressing it. And, you know, they're putting Campbell on notice, whether it's implicitly or explicitly. Like he knows now that, hey, I really have to step my game up, because whether it's to start the year or at some point during the course of the year, there's a guy that's there that's willing and capable of taking my job. And I think you need that kind of pressure, because Will Campbell came into this franchise as kind of just the heir apparent. Like he's going to be our left tackle, our cornerstone piece. He really didn't have any competition. And so now I think this is actually going to be a good motivator to see what this kid's made of.
100%. It will be a good motivator for Campbell, and maybe he needs that. You know, I mean, like, let's face it. We all know that if we're looking at like a prototypical left tackle in the NFL, I mean, Lomo is going to fit the paradigm better than Will Campbell.
Yes.
That doesn't mean he's a better left tackle than Will Campbell, but it's just, if, you know, he fits the paradigm better. So, you know, that sort of Will Campbell body type thing. I mean, we've talked about that for over a year, and it's just something that I think looms very large going into this training camp.
Yeah. And you know what? Look, when you're playing well, nobody's talking about your short arms or your physical stature.
That's exactly right.
You know what I mean?
When
you start getting dominated by some of the better defensive ends in the league, and when, you know, you're having awful Super Bowl and all these things are piling up, now people are talking about your arms and your physical stature and wondering if it's really a problem. And that's fair.
And right. And let's not forget how ugly that was at times, especially in the Super Bowl. You know, he's not the first linemen to go out there and play hurt. Linemen have done it before, and they've looked a lot better than that.
Yep.
And then let's also not pretend that he didn't have his ups and downs. And I know he was a rookie when he was healthy. And there were points this year where he looked like he really struggled against good defensive ends. And I'm thinking Myles Garrett. I'm thinking of TJ Watt with Pittsburgh. There were a couple other times against Atlanta. They got a couple good DNs. So Will Campbell, he also had some games where he played well, but it was definitely an up and down thing. And my thing has always been, you know, you draft a tackle with the number four pick in the draft, you're expecting that to be a plug and play guy.
Right.
And I think they could have found a Will Campbell type project somewhere later in the draft. And that's why I'll forever think it maybe wasn't the best pick. Mm. Now, if he turns out to be a good player, I guess, you know, that kind of settles the debate and I'm wrong. But I do feel like, you know, at the end of the day, this guy has had a lot of ups and downs for a really high draft pick. And you know, at this point, you just got to put him in the place that's best for him and best for the team and wash your hands of the 2025 draft, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Look, like I said at the beginning of this take, my allegiance is to whatever the best whoever the best left tackle is and whatever the best combination of linemen on the field is. We have a young quarterback that we need to protect. And you know what? Again, we can't dwell on spilt milk and say, well, you know, that fourth round pick, you know, that fourth overall pick wasn't the right choice, because maybe it wasn't. It's how do we respond from that, and can we fix and address the situation? And I give the Patriots credit for at least attempting to do that or putting themselves in a place where they can adjust if needed.
110%. All right, you ready to get into the schedule? Because this is like our annual tradition. Every show, every podcast kind of does this thing where we go game by game. And, you know, it's easy to dismiss it, but I will say last year when we did this, we I don't think we got to 14 wins, but I think both of us were like 12 or 13. And we kind of laughed about it at the time. Right. Like, oh, there's no way that will happen. And not only did it happen, it happened in excess, but I mean, we'll go game by game. We'll pick each game. We'll give some thoughts about each game. I will say my general thought about this schedule is that there are obviously some difficult games. It's definitely a harder schedule than last year. I don't think it's as hard as everyone is cracking out to be. It's an above average difficulty schedule. It's a step up for this team in terms of a challenge from last year, which was kind of a cakewalk. We all know that. It's not a criticism of the Patriots last year to say that or admit it. This is a tougher schedule. It is not a murderer's row by any means.
Yeah. I do think it's a harder schedule, but one of the reasons why, and I'm glad you said that, that it's not, you know, or it may appear a little harder on the surface than it actually is because, you know, I was thinking about it. I was looking through the divisions and the Patriots really have four games on their schedule that should be guaranteed wins right off the bat. And that's the Jets and the Dolphins, right?
100%.
And outside of the Patriots and the Bills, there really aren't many other teams, if any, in the league that should say that they have four quote unquote guaranteed wins on their schedule heading into week one. So
now those division games are always tricky too. So we got to remember that
for sure. They can be true. I mean, look, we saw the Bills lose to the Dolphins last year. Like we've seen these games be tricky. So by no means am I saying the Patriots can't lose those games, right?
But those are games you look at and you're like, there's a 90% chance you're winning those four games.
Exactly. And I don't know if a lot of other teams in this league have four divisional games that they can, because divisional games are always tough. I think divisional games carry an extra weight that just out of conference and out of divisions games don't. So to have four in division games that you look at and you say, these should in theory be cakewalks. Now, again, we know that that might not be the case, but I think that's very, very fortunate for this team.
Yeah, so obviously, you know, if you're looking at this schedule, you're looking at those six division games, you're saying we split with Buffalo, and then you take care of business against the Jets and the Dolphins twice each, and that's a 5-1 division. That's a great foundation. Now, if this team were to lose to a game, another game in the division, and besides Buffalo, who are they more likely to lose to, the Jets or the Dolphins?
That's tough. I'm going to say, I feel like it should be the Jets because I think the Jets are a more talented team on paper, but I'm going to say the Dolphins just because the Dolphins have always sneakily given us a little bit of trouble. Malik Willis has shown that he can be a little bit of a dangerous veteran at times. And I think they're the team that they're most likely to sleep on and look past.
Yeah, see, I'll go completely different direction. I have a sneaky feeling about that Jets team. You know, I don't think they're by any means a good team, but I think they improved. I think the Dolphins are absolutely pathetic. I don't know what the Dolphins did this year. I think they just completely punted on the 2026 season. I mean, I don't understand why they brought in Malik Willis. You know, only to surround him with like absolutely nothing around him. But it's kind of hard to figure out. But I think the Dolphins are going to quickly circle the drain. And also too, a rookie head coach in Miami. I mean, Aaron Glenn is obviously no Belichick either. So let's be clear about that. But I think this is going to be a really tough year for Miami.
So I actually think Miami is going to be the worst team in the league. I just think that when I look at sometimes in divisional games, when you're playing a bad team, like, you know, the bad team can rise to the occasion. You can overlook them and look past them. I think the Jets at least have enough talent that the Patriots will take them seriously. I worry that's the way I look at it. I worry that they could look past Miami, just because of how weak they are. And we've seen Malik Willis be like, any decent quarterback can turn it on for one game. You know what I mean? And so could that one game be against a divisional opponent that you're not taking seriously? I don't know. But regardless, they should win all four of those matchups.
Yep, that's the expectation. You know, and you go through this and there's always that game that they lose that you expect them to win. And I mean, last year it was the Raiders, right? And vice versa. So it does tend to even up. All right, well, let's start at week one and let's get into this. Patriots Seahawks week one, Wednesday night, September 9th, 2026 in Seattle. I will say that this is one of the things I hate about this schedule for the Patriots. I hate that they're getting the Seattle game in week one. This is probably the toughest game on their schedule, in my opinion, or one of the two toughest games on their schedule. Hate the fact that they're going to have to really work almost an uphill battle to start the season off 1-0. It's always tough to go to Seattle. Now they're raising a Super Bowl banner. They're a team that just kicked the Patriots' ass in the Super Bowl. We know there are matchup issues on both sides of the ball with the Seahawks and the Pats from what we saw last February. So I hate this as the opening game for the Pats, Justin.
Can I be honest? I have the total opposite feeling. So I look at the Seattle team and I think this Seattle team is the one that's coming in with all the pressure. They're the defending champs. They're opening up the league, you know, they're opening up the season, raising a banner, having a ring ceremony. Like, that puts a lot of pressure on you. This is a team that lost their Super Bowl MVP, right? Kenneth Walker's now with the Chiefs. They lost a couple of key pieces on that defense, both in their front seven and in their secondary. So I look at the Seattle team and I think they're going to have all the pressure of opening game banner ceremony. And I think they're a worse team. I think they lost some really important pieces.
Yeah. I mean, that's true. I mean, and Kenneth Walker gave the Patriots fits in that Super Bowl, you know, realistically that, yeah. I mean, like, I know we've all undervalued and diminished what running back means and the value of running backs, but there are times and places where, running back can still change a game. And I mean, Kenneth Walker changed that Super Bowl. He was a huge factor in what happened.
He did. And I mean, obviously that Seattle defense really carried them throughout the year and throughout the playoffs. And that defense has lost a couple pieces at all levels. So I just look at it and I say, you know, this is a Patriots team whose left tackle should be healthy. Their quarterback should be healthy. Some of those, you know, the Patriots arguably will never be healthier than on week one, right? Like, that's the freshest and healthiest a team should be is week one. So you have a Patriots who were banged up in the Super Bowl coming in healthy in week one, and you have the Seahawks that have lost some really key pieces on both sides of the ball with the pressure of Urbana ceremony. I kind of like the Patriots in that one.
That's fair. I mean, I also feel like, too, like, I hate that I feel like this puts a lot of pressure on Drake May, Justin. Like, you don't worry about, you know, the fact that you've got May, who, yes, he had this magical second season, and then he had an awful Super Bowl on the biggest stage, and how that might psychologically affect him. And I feel like I want him to start with a cupcake or two and get some good vibes going before we throw him back into the fire. I mean, he's literally being thrown right back into the inferno by starting off in Seattle. Like, that's I don't know. You don't worry about how this is going to affect Drake?
Let me ask you this. I know, you know, mentioning Tom Brady's names, you know, it's apples and oranges, but you think if Tom Brady lost to a team in the Super Bowl, he wouldn't be chomping at the bit to get right back after them on opening night? Do you think Tom Brady would want a cupcake game or two to start the season? So I kind of look at it and I say, hey, if Drake May's a real competitor and he's really PO'd about how that season ended and what happened in the Super Bowl and his performance in the blown opportunity, like, he should be relishing the opportunity to head into Seattle in week one and prove everybody wrong and say, hey, that was a fluke. I'm the real deal. And I want these guys. I want my revenge.
I hope that Drake May has that kind of attitude, but I've seen so many young quarterbacks get psychologically damaged. And you know, you're right. If May is really a star, this will not apply to him. But I look around this league, look at how many quarterback reclamation projects there are right now. Like, I feel like what happens to these guys and how their career starts and the sort of the energy, the vibe, the momentum around them is proving to be so impactful. Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, two great examples. Like, I don't want to see this kid. I mean, I worry about getting him thrown to the wolves. Now, if he is the kind of kid that we all think he is, you're right. It's not going to matter. But I would rather him have, if you're asking me, I would much rather have him starting with the Jets, just being honest. Okay, let's move to week two. Steelers at Patriots. This is the home opener. By the way, Patriots have the hardest opening month schedule for any team in the NFL in like 20 years. I saw that.
The combined winning percentage of the four teams was like,
for winning in Pittsburgh, win in Jacksonville, and you're, you know, you can go out and lose in Buffalo and Seattle and still have a good start. That brings us to week four, Patriots at Bills. They did win in Buffalo last year. To me, both these Patriots-Bills games are going to be 50-50 games. Buffalo won a pair. We won down there last year. I think that could go either one of these games could go either way. As it is, when I look at the schedule, I'm calling it a split, and I'm saying the Patriots are going to lose in Buffalo in week four.
Yes, I think it's going to flip. I think, you know, Patriots obviously won in Buffalo last year. I think Buffalo is going to get the better of us. I think that's going to be our first loss of the year. Patriots come out of that game 3-1.
Absolutely. And then they move into another stretch here, four games, where I think they have a chance to stack some wins. They host the Raiders and the Jets, both of them at home. I think, I don't know what you feel, those are easy dubs for the Pats. So I'm calling those wins.
Yeah, the only, I mean, I think the Raiders could sneakily be a better team than maybe people are expecting. I still don't think they're going to be the Patriots. I think the Patriots.
No way does this Raiders team surprise the Patriots again. No. You talk about revenge games. Yes. And after what happened last year and the way the Patriots team came out in the second half of that opening game last year and just fell apart, there's no way they're going to get caught off guard by this Raiders team again. I think they'll be very much struggling. They may have a rookie quarterback. I think that's an easy one for the Pats. And then the Jets, the same thing. In Foxborough, there's no way I see the Jets coming up here and winning. I call that a win for the Pats too.
I do too. I think at Chicago is where, you know, in that four-game stretch, you're going to face your biggest test. I mean,
I agree with that, but I would also say, like, I like the Patriots in Chicago. Like, I mean, it's a Thursday night game, granted, but I think Chicago takes a step back this year, Justin. They won a lot of close games last year.
They won a ton of close games. And I think, you know, I don't know. I know Caleb Williams took a step forward last year, but there's just something about him. I'm going to need to see it done consecutive seasons, multiple seasons before I actually like respect him as somebody that I'm, you know, afraid to play. I do think the Patriots win this, and I think they go down to Miami and they win that game as well. So I think the Patriots come out of that stretch 7-1.
Yeah, well, I kind of agree with that. I will say about Caleb Williams, Justin, that, you know, the thing with him, he is an amazing playmaker, but it's the consistency.
Right.
It's the consistency that has been an issue. He is a playmaker, a great playmaker, but not necessarily a great player yet.
Yes.
And I think that's the thing you have to consider with him. Like, he will make highlight plays still, and then he will follow up with missing basic throws, bad turnovers, big mistakes. So I think that's what you have to say with him. Yeah. So I like the Pats in that game. I like the Pats in Miami. And I'll add one more. I like the Packers. I like the Patriots at home against the Packers coming up here. I mean, the Packers team is a good team, but that's a game the Patriots should win in Foxborough.
That is a game the Patriots should win in Foxborough. However,
you gotta throw a few L's in.
I am gonna give them a loss for that one. I think this Green Bay team, you know, is pretty dangerous when they're healthy. And I just see that being like a weirdly tough game that's going to like come down to the wire and like be decided by like a field goal. I don't know. I'm not saying the Patriots can't win that game, but I just got a weird feeling about that one. I'm going to give it to the Packers.
I mean, look, I'm not going to, you know, argue that pick at all. But what I will say is, like, you know, there are a lot of games on this schedule, like the Bears, like the Packers, the Lions, Chargers, that you can look at and say they're 50-50 games. So you might, you know what I mean? Like, you could call the Packers game a loss, and then they could go out and lose in Chicago and win. I mean, there's a lot of games that are toss-up. And that's kind of the difference from last year to this year, where last year, most of their games, they were clearly the better team, believe it or not, by the end of the year, at least. This year, there is a lot of toss-up games. You know, next week after that, Patriots at Lions, going to Munich, Germany. If this game was in Detroit, I would like Detroit more. As it stands, I'm kind of on the fence about this one. I'm going to call this one a loss for the Pats, but I think this is one of those games that could go either way.
Yeah, I'm also going to call this one a loss. I think this is possibly the only time in the season the Patriots suffer back-to-back losses. I got them losing, like I said, in Green Bay. And then I think the Germany game is just going to be weird. International games are always weird. I think the Lions are a good team. I kind of like what they've done to rebuild their line on both sides of the ball. And I think, you know, they've taken a couple steps back in the last few seasons. And I'm looking for them to reemerge as one of the NFC's top contenders. I think they're going to be a good team this year. And I think they give us some trouble in Munich.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, I think in the Lions step back last year, I feel like they bounce back a little this season. I kind of like that Detroit team. Yeah. So it's going to be a tough game no matter where it's played. Week after that in Los Angeles, Patriots, the Chargers. The Pats have sort of always had the Chargers number going back to like the Bill Parcells era. It's just one of those things. Obviously beat them in the playoffs this year. I have a funny feeling about this game going out there on a Sunday night. I'm going to call this one an L. But this is one of those 50-50 games that I really feel like could go either way.
So let's not forget, Patriots coming off a bye that week.
That's a fair point.
So Patriots coming off a bye. I think a lot of it, and you know, you can really say this about any team in any game. I think a lot of it is going to come down to the health at the Chargers of the Chargers, because you know the Chargers are poised to have one of the best offensive lines in football this year if they're healthy, right? They have Joe Alt returning. They have the other left tackle that went down like right at the beginning of the season. So like this should be a different Chargers team than you faced in the playoffs that gave you a fairly tough game. Justin Herbert really didn't play well, but he's at home. It's prime time. I'm still going to give the Patriots a win with this one though.
You know, as much as I want to dump on this Chargers team, if I could just step back and look and be like, look, this was a playoff team last year who lost both of their starting left tackles, who, oh, by the way, are two of the best players at the position in the NFL.
Yes.
And now both those guys are going to be healthy. So, you know, when I look at that AFC West, I go back and forth on who I like. We'll get to that in the next episode or so. But like, I do think the Chargers are going to be a real contender in that AFC West division. And I just see it as a road game. It's going to be a tough game. All right, let's go to the next game. Bills at Patriots. Again, 50-50 game. I'm calling this one a win for the Pats because it's in Foxborough. I think the goal here is you want to split with Buffalo.
You want to split with Buffalo. And this schedule is kind of littered with revenge games, right? From the Seahawks to the Steelers to the Raiders.
Yep.
And this Bills game at home, I think, is really an important one because let's not forget, you blew like a 24-3
lead. Yeah, 21-point lead.
Yep. Yeah, so you blow a 21-point lead last year. And that to me might have been, you know, outside of the Super Bowl, the worst loss for the Patriots last season. I think you got to get that one, especially after you lose in Buffalo. So I'm gonna give the Patriots a win in a hard fought game against Buffalo.
Absolutely. All right, we're on the same page for that one. Again, coming back, a quick turnaround, Vikings at Patriots. Look, until this Vikings team proves that they have a quarterback, I don't see how I could possibly pick them in this game. And, you know, I'm a little bit optimistic, honestly, about Kyler Murray and what he's going to do there. But let's face it, he hasn't even won the starting job yet. And by the way, both the Vikings quarterbacks have like huge injury histories. These are two guys that are constantly getting hurt. So who the hell knows who's even going to be playing quarterback for Minnesota by the time we get to December 10th. So this game's in Foxborough. I think the Patriots are the better team, even under the best case circumstances for the Vikings. So I will take the Patriots again in this one.
Yeah, I get the Patriots winning this one in you know, that brings them to 2-2 in the year against the NFC North. But I do like them against Minnesota. I don't think Minnesota's a bad team. Like you said, I think if Kyler Murray's healthy and you pair him with Justin Jefferson and what's his name? The other guy, the number two there.
Addison.
Yep. Jordan Addison. That can be a pretty good football team. I don't think it will be a cakewalk as long as the Vikings are healthy, but I do think the Patriots take care of business in home and in prime time.
The week after that at Chiefs, Patriots at Chiefs, December 21st, 8:15, Monday night game. Tough draw to go to Kansas City on a night game. I don't think this is the death sentence that it was a few years ago, like with Kansas City. Like Kansas City is not going to be the world beater that they were, say, 3 or 4 years ago. It's always tough to go to Arrowhead. I see Kansas City actually as a playoff team this year. I think they bounce back. I don't see them as a Super Bowl contender. However, again, this is a game that could go either way. It's in Arrowhead. I'm going to give the Chiefs the win on this one, but I would not be surprised. And this is not like it was a few years ago where you go to Arrowhead on a Monday night in December and it's like, forget about it. Chalk that up as an L. This one could truly go either way, but I'm going to give the dub to the Chiefs.
Yeah, so I'm going to lean the other direction here. This to me is actually the game that I'm looking forward to the most all season on the Patriots schedule on Monday night in Arrowhead. And there's a couple, I think, important things here. The Chiefs loaded that defense back up, right? I think that's going to be really important for them. By this point, Patrick Mahomes should be fully back and healed from his injury in a groove. Rashee Rice, same thing, right? And let's not forget, this is week 15. The Kansas City Chiefs are playing in a really tough division, right? They got to compete with the Broncos. They got to compete with the Chargers, right? The Chiefs have a high expectation, to get back to the playoffs and to compete for a Super Bowl. Like a week 15 Monday night game, this Kansas City Chiefs team might be really, really desperate for a big win in a big moment.
Yeah, it's a fair point.
And honestly, there's no quarterback in the league currently that is better in that type of situation than Patrick Mahomes. So I'm going to give the Chiefs a win, but I can't wait for this game. I already got it circled.
Yep. Look, Patrick Mahomes is on the decline. You heard it on this podcast first. I've said it for 3 years. He's still a good quarterback. He's still a really good quarterback. Yeah. And the Chiefs will be a good team this year. So I think everything you said is spot on. Following week, Sunday after Christmas, Patriots at Jets. We know how this one's going to go. Who the hell is going to be coaching the Jets? I got 10 bucks that said it's not Aaron Glenn. I'd be shocked if Aaron Glenn is still the coach of that team.
Yep.
Who the heck knows who's going to be the quarterback? They're probably down to their third or fourth quarterback at this point. I mean, the New York Jets will be on the clock. They will be on the clock, okay, for a top 3 to 5 draft pick, probably top 6 or 7 draft pick at best. By the time we get to this game, maybe they'll be playing spoiler. I don't know. I have a hard time seeing the Jets, even if it's in the Meadowlands. And at this point in the season, I like the Patriots in this one.
Yeah, I think the Patriots should roll the Jets. I mean, the Jets at this point are going to be planning their offseason vacation. They're going to have their golf trips in there, their trips to the tropics all lined up. They got nothing left in the tank at this point. I think the Patriots are going to roll them.
Yeah, 1,000%. And then the last two games at home, Broncos at Patriots, Dolphins at Patriots, date and time to be determined, which is a huge pain in the ass, by the way, if you're a season ticket holder. Also a huge pain in the ass that you have two home games in January that aren't playoff games. Kind of a lousy home schedule, as an aside, by the way. I'll get to that maybe later. But, you know, I like the Pats in both these games. I think the Broncos step back this year. I don't know. I'm not saying they'll be a bad team. I feel like I know they got Jalen Waddle. I like the team, but I think the Patriots will win both these games at home.
So I agree. I think they close out the season with a cupcake at home against Miami. However, I'm going to give Denver the win here. I like this Denver team. I still think, you know, they got a good scrappy quarterback. They have a great head coach. You know, they added to that offense, bringing Jalen Waddle in. They still have a top 3 offensive line in the league. The defense is still good. And this is going to be a big point of emphasis for them. You know, Patriots went into Mile High Stadium and beat them in the AFC Championship, right? Bo Nix was injured. And I think this is going to be a game that the Denver Broncos have circled on their schedule. So I'm going to give the Broncos the edge in this one.
Fair. Okay. I mean, that's a losable game. I think, again, you could put that into the filing cabinet of the 50-50 games on this schedule. It could go either way.
Right.
So add it all up. And actually, we both have them at 12 wins. I'm going to revise my official prediction to 11-6. Because I feel like there will be one game on the schedule that they lose. Sure. And because there's just that we're not expecting.
Yeah.
And that I feel like it's such a high volume of games that could go either way. But if I'm looking at 50-50 games on the schedule, I'm looking at Jaguars, both games against Buffalo, the Bears, the Packers, the Lions, the Chargers. I would say Kansas City and the Broncos. To me, there's like 8 or 9 games right there that are going to go either way, where, you know, you figure – both teams are kind of on equal footing. I think the Seattle game, I think you do disagree with me. I feel like they have a clear disadvantage in that game. And then every other game on the schedule, I feel like they have a clear advantage. So add it all up. And I don't see this as like this insurmountable schedule that they just can't figure out. This is a team that if Drake May stays healthy and, you know, they play well and Drake May plays well and they can protect him, and everything kind of goes even half according to plan, and they don't have like the worst luck ever, like one of those teams that loses 7 close games or something, right? They should win 10, 11, 12 games.
Yeah. And look, I got him at 12-5. And I think there's a couple things you love about this schedule. I think you love the fact that you got a couple of weak divisional games that can hopefully help pad the stats. I think the placement of the bye week is perfect. I love the week 11 bye week because I think it's not early enough in the season that, you know, it's kind of wasted, but it's also not so late in the season that you can't build your momentum back after it. Right. So I love the week 11 bye week and where it's placed. I love the fact that you end the season with a cupcake game at home against who should arguably be the worst team in the league. So I love both of those things. And then from a viewer perspective, you know, look, obviously it was fun seeing the Patriots go on that run last year and just beat up on teams and stack win after win after win. But I got to tell you, I'm looking at this schedule this year, and just from the perspective of a fan, somebody who loves football, yep, this is a 10 times more entertaining schedule than the schedule the Patriots faced last year. You're going to learn a lot. Yep. You're going to learn a lot about your quarterback. I mean, you know, we keep talking about Christian, Gonzalez and giving him a big contract. Well, look, he's going to be tested. He's going to have to go up against the likes of JSN, DK Metcalf, Justin Jefferson, Rashee Rice, Jalen Waddle, Amon-Ra St. Brown, all these guys, right? So like, It's just an exciting schedule for the matchups and what you're going to learn from your quarterback, your star players, and your core group of guys. And then just the entertainment factor. You've got a lot of good teams on this schedule. I think it's going to be a very exciting year, even if you don't win as many games as last year.
This will be an interesting year. And look, my goal for this team right now is for them to make the playoffs. That is my right. goal. Like, I want them to, I think that's a successful year. I think this team is closer to a Super Bowl and will be a better team this year than last year, even though they might only win 10 games or 11 games. You know, right. They're not going to win 14 games. And let's just disavow ourselves of the notion that they're going to increase their win total. That was a exceptional win total. It's not going to happen again. So I think, like, we have to accept the fact that this team could be a lot better and still only win 10 or 11 games. But if they go and they make the playoffs, we've seen so many times anything can happen. You know, this team won 3 games in the playoffs last year. Anything can happen in the postseason. They're going to be, I think, have as good a chance as anyone in the AFC.
Yeah, exactly. I think you're 100% right. If the Patriots are able to stay healthy, they may very well wind up being a better team that has a worse record in a worse finish to the season. Like, I mean, let's face it. Like, the only way the Patriots, like, to win, what was it? Was it 14 games last year or 13?
Yep, four.
So to win 14 games, yeah, you win 14 games, you win your division, and you go to the Super Bowl, right? Like, it's very tough to outdo that performance. Like, you almost have to pencil yourself in for a regression. You know what I mean? Because it's like, is it likely you win 14 games again? No. Is it likely you win your division?
I mean, 14 wins is an amazing season. Like, that's a generational season. You know, an 11 or 12 win season is a great season. You know, team doesn't win 10 games. That's a good season. That's something that as a fan, you should be happy with when you do consider it is an above average difficulty schedule.
Exactly. So, you know, you're probably going to win less games. Winning the division is a toss up because you always got to, you know, you're going to have to battle with Buffalo. And then unless you make it back to the Super Bowl and win the Super Bowl, you're not going to achieve as highly as you did last year. So, like, the Patriots are probably going to be a better team that are primed for a regression in all, like, senses of the word.
Yeah, 100%, 110%. But they're building something here, and I think that's the bigger point. And I think, you know, the thing I'll say I like about this franchise is that I do feel like they did go into this year, and we'll see what happens with A.J. Brown, with the mentality of like, trying to maximize Drake May's rookie contract years. Yeah. I thought they made more moves than I thought they would, and they've built a team that I think – will be a very viable team this year and has a chance.
Yep, absolutely. And at the very, very least, you're going to get some exciting games. I love the NFC North being on their schedule because I think that's one of the more exciting and tough divisions in football. I love, you know, the number of primetime games they got. I love going into Kansas City. Personally, I love going against Seattle for a Super Bowl rematch. Like, I love Denver in an AFC championship rematch. Like, I just think you have some really, really exciting games that you can look forward to this year.
A lot of marquee games, yes, for sure. All right, man. Anything else you want to add before we wrap it up?
No, I think that about does it.
All right, well, we'll see what happens with mini camp OTAs. Like, you know, it's a tough time on the sports calendar. Thank God, like, it's summer, the weather's good. The Red Sox are freaking terrible. It's going to be a long summer. You know, I've been enjoying the hockey playoffs. I've been enjoying the basketball playoffs big time. Wemby the other night.
And
Knicks-Cavs game one was exceptional. Once that ends, if the Red Sox don't figure their shit out, it's going to be a long time until training camp.
Yes. Yeah, big time. I mean, we already talked about Sox being sellers at the deadline. I think everyone kind of expected a little bit more out of them this year. Celtics with an early bounce in the playoffs. Bruins with an early bounce in the playoffs. Yep. So, yeah, I mean, the Patriots are where all of New England is turning their attention to very quickly.
It is. And like, this is a thing where, like, look, you know, the Red Sox could just be competitive and it will be entertaining until training camp. Yeah. But when you fall out of competition and you look like you're a bad team.
Right.
And that's what they look like right now, a bad team. And I know they're showing some minor signs of life, but there are so many holes in that roster and on that lineup. Like, right now, I think most Boston sports fans are just expecting that the Red Sox are really not a serious contender. They're not really going to have a real competitive baseball season. And so we're going to have this huge gap in the summer where there's going to be a lot of meaningless, bad baseball until the Patriots actually do, you know, put on their pads.
Yeah. I mean, firing five of your coaches, including your head coach in his whole staff, like, that's typically never a sign that good things are coming your way.
Yeah,
right?
100%. So, and the fact they can't score runs. I mean, you don't have to score runs to win baseball games.
Exactly. So, yeah, Boston sports in a little bit of a lull right now, but hopefully this Patriots team can pick up the slack and kick things off with a bang. It's kind of, you know, I kind of like the fact that opening night, we get to see the Patriots play, and it should be a good one. Super Bowl rematch in Seattle.
Yeah. Well, it'll give us something to look forward to all summer.
Exactly.
Well, I want to thank everyone that listened to this episode of the Ultimate Patriots Podcast. Find us on Facebook, follow our page, reach out to us if you got any questions, ideas, thoughts, or comments, and we'll try to respond to them all. Have a great week. We'll catch you in a couple weeks, probably, with another episode. Be healthy, be well, be safe, everyone.